Yeah, you had mentioned that, but you didn't know whether to talk about it, and I had always said, well, you know, I don't know, but you're certainly welcome to trot out all of the options and the ideas, and I'll respond as
all right.
I can. But yeah, you
right.
did say that you were a little bit uneasy.
Yeah, well,
say,
you know what?
Let's talk about, you know, whatever we want to talk about. Information
yes.
is good.
Well, you know, this goes down to starting in 2003. And, you know, in 2000, I started writing The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. In 2002, I met Daphne. In 2003, I was, Daphne and I had separated, and then we made an attempt at getting together. And she was at her aunt's house in Atlanta, and I picked her up, and we decided that Atlanta was fairly near to Kentucky, and that we would go to Kentucky, and I would get to meet Carla, and I would get to meet David, and I had never met David at that point. And Daphne actually had met David because at one point, David heard about her musicianship. And she's an awesome harp player, piano player, and flute player. She's really sensitive. And sometimes we put her stuff out. And David invited her to come to Carla's, and he wanted to do a recording with her. And so Daphne went to Carla with her mother, and they did do the recording, but David, I don't know if I want to tell this whole story. This is about Ra and Jesus, but in any case, at a certain point, David locked himself in the room and didn't want to entertain anybody. And
he did that most of the weekend, actually. He was trying to get... He puts things off, as many of us do. And he wasn't ready for Daphne. He thought he was ready to record, and then when she came, he discovered, no, there were still things to do. So most of the time, he was locked in his room, getting his software ready to do the recording, and leaving the entertaining to me. And unfortunately, I had a broken foot, so I was limping around trying to entertain. And Daphne had
mm-hmm.
come with her mom, and that made another complication. So because she wanted to see things, and she wanted to be, basically, she needed some attention. And so I spent a lot of that weekend driving her around with a broken foot and showing her pretty houses and just being, you know, a good hostess.
Mm-hmm.
What can I say? I realized it was not the brightest thing for me to do that, especially with a broken foot. But some things die hard, and hospitality in the South is just ingrained in you. If you happen to be a
mm-hmm.
woman brought up as a Southern woman, you have to entertain and be polite and do the pretty. And so I was doing the pretty. David was trying to get things ready to record, and we were all at loose ends. So that was basically what I remember about the weekend. Oh boy, they finally did get about 45 minutes of recording done.
Right. And so now we had driven into Anchorage, and I suggested, why don't we drive by Carla's house? And I just wanted to look at it. And I was not intending, Carla didn't even know we were coming. And there was no way I intended to knock on her door. But as we were parked in front of the house, Daphne jumped out of the car and said, I know them all. I'm going to knock on the door. And she did. And David came downstairs, and he mumbled a couple of hellos, went back upstairs, and after that, he was absolutely furious with me. We violated his free will. We came to his door. He really values his privacy, and we didn't see him for the rest of the trip. Although Carla and I were going out to the local place for food and
burgers,
getting to know each other for the first time, for the second time. In the meantime, Daphne and I
always had a good time together.
Yeah, Daphne and I were staying in this motel, I guess about a few miles away, and we were having these amazing sessions. And I was asking questions, and it was a little scary, the kind of answers I was getting. Scary because of the responsibility, if it was true. Now, I had learned, and I was pretty disciplined, never to believe a channel source, because they say it. There needed to be more evidence than, at least at that time, that something was true or not true, not just to go repeat, Ra says this, or the Elohim says this, or so-and-so says this. But David's channel source had made the comment, and this is a pretty close paraphrase, and it was in the book that I wrote. They said, "We came to you in Christianity, but we don't often speak in those terms anymore because of the way religion screwed it up." Now, they didn't use screwed it up. Maybe they said distorted by religion, but nonetheless, they said, "We came to you in Christianity." And I said, "What did that mean? What were they saying? They came to us in Christianity." Now, those of you that were listening to the previous 2 weeks of calls, where we talked about rewriting the Old Testament, and we talked about how many of those beings who were described as God in the Old Testament were actually ETs. That was the indication, a lot of evidence to that, not just from channeling, but there's two scholars. One of them was Zachariah Sitchin, and the other was Michael Tellinger. Michael Tellinger is going to be on Coast to Coast tonight. And they came to those conclusions by translating Sumerian tablets, that the Sumerians were, according to all these theories, were hybrids of apes and Anunnaki that they used as slaves to do gold mining. And there's a huge amount of evidence that this is true if you start looking at it, particularly because these human hybrids that were derivative of the Anunnaki had a city, had a country, and there's loads of translations of information from the walls, the etchings or carvings in the walls, which is how they wrote their books, okay, or clay tablets. And so these Sumerians were the beginning of the populations that represented the Hebrews in the Old Testament, if I have it correct, or if this information is correct. And the Anunnaki, who had been their god form, continued to act as gods for them. Of course, they were in bodies, but they had powers. They could make it rain. They could do things. They were impressive. And they wanted to create fear in these humans. And then there were two brothers who had opposite points of view of how this should work. One was Enlil, and one was Enki. And the Enlil brother thought that by making humans that could procreate, it was violating, if you watch Star Trek, the Prime Directive. And there was a Prime Directive by the, I believe, the Confederation or some authority or some agency that said, when you go to a... Pardon me?
Federation of Angels and Planets and the Service of the Infinite Creator. Better known as the Federation for obvious reasons.
right. Well, you know, there was an edict against messing with the indigenous populations and the indigenous evolution of the planet. So one of the brothers didn't want to do that. The other brother did. And he started messing with it. And he started messing with it because they made these humans that were procreating. And originally, the first brother didn't want them to procreate. And now there's all these humans coming up all over the place. And they're looking at these Anunnaki gold miners as their gods. And then they started rebelling against them. They started, you know, I don't have all the details, but they built their own city. And the Old Testament was derivative of this conflict between these two brothers who were acting as God. Now, remember, I'm not saying this is true, but if you research this, there's a huge amount of evidence that is not going to come into the collective consciousness, but it's strong enough that it makes an incredible case that this is true. And when I questioned our sources about it, they said it was. And so now we have in the Old Testament many of the times that the name God was used was either one brother or the other. And the one brother, the Enlil brother, who wanted to get rid of humans, was allegedly responsible for Sodom and Gomorrah, okay? And the nuking of that, was a nuking of that city. And the other brother was responsible for Noah and creating a library of all the genes of all the life forms on the planet. And I don't have the answer to this one yet. It's probably there. I could probably figure it out, find out. But either the first brother was responsible for the deluge, or he knew it was coming, and he didn't want to do anything about it. And the second brother knew about it and was organizing Noah to collect all the genes. Now, in top of all this, we have the Ra group. And you got to figure that they're paying attention to this, and they're saying, how can we make a contribution? Because it was a nightmare. It was like deluges, atom bombs, and who knows what else. And that it seems like they made their first contribution in Egypt. Now, Atlantis was still going on separate from all this. What I learned was, you know, this was the beginning of one of the root races that happened in Africa that ended up in Sumeria. But apparently, there was still lots of stuff going on planet Earth that was separate from this. There were the Chinese that were evolving as a separate root race. There were the Atlanteans. The Atlanteans had a disaster, but the Atlanteans were connected to, I believe they were connected to Ra. And if you read Edgar Cayce, Carla, I don't know if you've read Edgar Cayce on this, but in Atlantis, there were two opposing groups that were at odds with each other. One was the sons of Belial, and the other was the children of the Law of One. Did you ever read that in Edgar Cayce?
I believe that I have read those sessions. It's been a long time ago. But yeah.
Well, again, as I was studying the raw material, and I kept hearing the Law of One, the Law of One, the Law of One, I started to realize that the Law of One was Ra's, how would we say it, slogan, their bottom line, that the whole universe is one being, and we separated ourselves, and how do we give people the experience so they can recombine and experience the all that is. And that was the essence of evolution. And so now we have all these humans on Earth in Africa and I guess the Middle East, and they're evolving, and I think they're becoming the Hebrews. And this was a separate wandering tribe, and this one brother is trying to evolve them, and they decide, I guess, that they're planning the Ra group. Now, I don't know who was talking to the Ra group. The only indication in the Ra material was Akhenaten in that period, although there was indication that they were making connection with people in South America and where else, Carla?
In Atlantis.
And Atlantis. Well, Atlantis was breaking up, and so the Atlanteans were leaving Atlantis, and they were going to South America and to Egypt. And that's in the Edgar Cayce materials. And that there's an indication that Edgar Cayce had this early life in Egypt, 10,000 BC, and he was connecting with the Ra group, but that didn't come from Edgar Cayce. It came from Carla Ruckert. This was an incredible correlation that I discovered at that time when I was researching everything. Because I was, you know, when you discover our group, when you who are listening, I mean, your first thought has to be, can this be real? Because this is such a story of, you know, the way things work that I don't believe has ever been presented in our recorded history. And I kept saying that. Why am I learning all this? I must be making some kind of mistake. And I kept researching and researching and researching, and everything was coming up supportive. I couldn't find a single bit of evidence that discounted what I was uncovering. And so we have the Old Testament, and that as I was seeing it, the Ra group was starting to participate in the evolution of the humans. And I know there's much more to the story than I am talking about this evening. But just to share the little bits of things that I uncovered, you know, the way evolution works has to do with opening DNA strands. And there's 12 strands, and the first seven relate to the first seven chakras. And humans were engineered to only have 2 to 3 strands open, which was their sex chakra and their power chakra. And that to prepare for the graduation that was coming up in this period, humans had to have their heart chakra open at least 51%. And so if you are in the upper realms and thinking, and, you know, they think, they look at us, they make plans, if they're thinking, how do we help the humans to graduate? Because it's a nightmare down there. Everyone's competing, killing each other, it's dog-eat-dog. They don't even know anything about the law of one. Well, what they needed to do was to create a person who could hold the energy of the heart chakra open. And that person then would radiate love to other people, and he would become a reference point for opening the heart chakra. And that it's my contention that this was all a plan of the Ra group, that it wasn't just an accident. it was like a deliberate plan, and that there was a person who had volunteered for this mission, someone that was already graduated from this realm. And then we can look here at Edgar Cayce, because Edgar Cayce talked a lot about Jesus, had a big connection with Jesus. There was a book that came out, and it all seemed to fit together. You know, the premise is that Edgar Cayce was one of those people that the Ra group was talking to, although that was never stated in the Carla Rucker challenge. And at a certain point, I don't think they want to say things that you can't validate, or that particularly where people have attachments in this realm. I mean, this call is a, how do we say, going out on a limb to be talking about something that is so sacred to so many people. And the real bottom line is that if somebody is using Jesus as their connection to God and it's working for them, they don't need to know all this, okay? They can just keep doing what they're doing, and there's no reason to try to convert a Christian to understanding this whole, it would be counterproductive. And just as in the early stages, they had sent me to a Mormon church with the indication that the Elohim was the same source that was working with the Mormons. And I realized pretty quickly, even though I got a lot of interest, that the Mormons were going to have no real ongoing interest in someone who was channeling the Elohim today, because they all had their reality system wired up to events that happened 100 years ago, 130 years ago. So that's one of the things I've learned, and probably you guys have learned this, because when people have a reality system, it doesn't serve a purpose to go into somebody with a strong reality system and try to tell them this stuff, because they won't hear you. It's the people who can't find a reality system in this realm that fits them, and that are searching for truth, that are open to the kind of work we're doing. And they almost have to find us accidentally and it kind of sneaks up on you, because you can't advertise this publicly as what it is. You can't do it. No one will come. They'll think you're a nutcase. In fact, I believe they told Carla, in particular, in the early stages of her Raw sessions, don't advertise. Didn't they tell you that?
Actually, that was Don's desire from the very beginning. He was not wanting to advertise. He was wanting to make the material available to interested seekers. And so he wanted to come across strictly as a researcher. Mm-hmm. He wasn't interested in claiming things. He was interested only in helping as many people on planet Earth get this material as was humanly possible. And this was before computers, so when he first told me he wanted to make this available to everybody on the planet, I thought, how am I going to do this for Don? Because I was very strongly oriented to doing whatever Don said. But computers were the answer. And it wasn't that the Ra group was saying, do this, do that, come across this way. None of that. The Ra group always said, we will respond to questions. We have found your group because you are seeking in a somewhat more intense way than most. And so we're glad to have found the group, and we're glad to share material, but we don't want to just tell things to you. We need you to ask us questions. And actually, in this, you'll notice, everybody, that Wynn has been just really given such a riff. It's scholarly, you know, totally collected riff of somebody that has done a lot of research, has a lot of facts, and he's really going, going, going. I have not said anything. The reason for that is I'm here to support Wynn, but I actually have no idea from the Law of One material whether or not this connection is as Wynn thought. It could be. It's a very valid possibility. But Don did not question along the lines of Zachariah Sitchin. He questioned along the lines of he was trying to find out how we got to where we are and where we're going from here. He was trying to find out why we're here, what the deal is, what's our job, and what's the nature of the creation. So he was aiming at this from the standpoint of a scientist. Wynn, on the other hand, is aiming at this from the standpoint of someone who's trying to put the pieces together in his own way. And he's more of a historian and an archaeologist, if you will, than someone who is, like Don, an engineer and a scientist, and trying to do absolutely pure science. Don was trying to do that, as difficult as it was. And Wynn has basically simply shared the information he's found from all of his research and kicking the tires and putting the pieces together in his own way. So I can't say that there is this connection as Wynn says it. What I can say is that when Don asked questions about Jesus, the Ra group was right there, glad to talk about Jesus, knowing about Jesus, and very responsive to any questions Don asked. So there was definitely this total awareness of who Jesus the Christ was as an historical figure and as a messenger of the Law of One. And I think Don did not focus on Casey. And I think that's where your investigation and research goes one way and Don's went another. Because he wasn't trying to make the connection between Casey and the raw material.
He actually asked the question directly, and they didn't acknowledge it, you know? And
the question of
Casey and the raw material. They asked, where was Casey getting his messages from?
They said that he was getting them from
the universal mind, or its high self, or the Akashic
Records.
The
universal mind, and because of the fact that that is made up of probability vortexes rather than settled fact, because everything hasn't happened yet.
Who the hell knows what the universal mind is? That's one of those phrases. When somebody says it, everyone thinks, oh, yeah, the universal mind, but when you take it apart, no one knows what it is. I have, in doing these questions for myself, I have noticed that they don't always tell the truth. I'm going to give an example of that. It's not that they're liars. It's just that there's, in my case, there's places where they don't want me to depend on them for answers, and they would answer a question in such a way that they would give a clue, but it would not be the right answer. But what they did say was a clue that made me pursue something, and then I would pursue it like a dog with a bone, and I could see why they said it, you know?
And I found exactly what they did say about Casey. Don asked Well, who spoke to Rick or Casey? And Ross says, no entity spoke to Rick or Casey. And Don says, well, then where did the information come from? And the rock group says, the one vibratory sound complex Edgar used as gateway into intelligent infinity from eighth density or the octave to view the present, which is not the continuum you experience, but the potential social memory complex of this planetary sphere. The term your peoples have used for this is the Akashic Record or the Hall of Records. And then they say, this is the last question which you now may ask.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you're, that's why you're saying that they just cut him off, right?
Right, right.
Uh-huh.
And, but, you know, the thing that triggered me was when I read the Edgar Casey material, there was this event described in this previous life of Edgar Casey when he was an Egyptian high priest, Ra-Ta, and that he was doing all these healings. And in the Edgar Casey material, he built the pyramids by levitation. And that then it said, Edgar Casey, or this previous life of Edgar Casey, became known as Ra, the sun god, in Egypt, okay? That's all they said in the Edgar Casey material. But then as I studied all of this deeper, in the Carla Ruckert material, they talked about how the Ra group had affinity with this high priest in Egypt at the very same period that Edgar Casey was talking about, and that they worked with this high priest, and guess what? They built the pyramids by levitation. And but there was a piece of information that came through Carla that never came through Casey. And that was the priests of the time took this information and you were, instead of it being available to lift the whole vibration of humanity, they tried to make it for themselves and control people with it. And now there was this thing called the Amun priesthood, and there was the name Amun Ra, but Amun Ra was not the Ra group. But the Ra group had done such a spectacular show. In fact, they even manifested bodies, according to Carla's material, that people could see. They were working hand in hand, trying to help us evolve. And it came out dead. And then the Ra group said, we did damage because of that, and we have to stay in your realm to help ameliorate, if that's the right word, the damage they did. And the damage was bringing in all this esoteric knowledge, all these wisdoms, all this miraculous ability, demonstrating it. And it was all picked up by the priesthood and used for self-serving purposes for thousands of years. And the gods of Egypt, as I came to realize, were actually the service to self negative Anunnaki. And until there was a pharaoh that attempted to change this around, whose name was Akhenaten, and Akhenaten was married to Nefertiti, and of course, I have this amazing workshop. If this is intriguing to you, if this is ringing bells and whistles, it's called the Egyptian Connection, egypt.intelligent-infinity.com, and I'm never going to do that workshop again. It was way too emotional.
And
when I talk,
it is remarkable, and this is your area of total expertise, and I always stand in awe before people that have that scholarly ability to recall tons of detail. Give me 2 hours, and I can sort of get everything in my short-term memory and do a good job of like passing a test or, you know, whatever. But to have this, all this information on tap so that you read more and you can slide things into it and make the puzzle work, I think it's remarkable when somebody can remember this huge amount of material. Because if you just looked at one of the sources, like Sitchin, my goodness, is it 9 books that you have to read, 9 fat books, before you get the whole history of the Anunnaki?
I never even read Sitchin, okay? Uh-huh. It's like I browse things on the web. And the thing is, I'm almost certain that I was alive then. And when I read things about when I was alive, it's like, I guess this is one of the values of learning this whole track, because many of us have had lifetimes. Some of us go back to that event. Some of us came in somewhere else. But when you can get the history of something where you were, it makes things go snap, crackle, and pop. You become Rice Krispies, right? Remember Rice Krispies. Well, in any case, you know, one of the things that happened, I'll give you an example of how the... you know what? There's a couple of things. We got 11 minutes officially, and I want to present some of the particulars here before, you know, the actual nuts and bolts things that are pretty amazing. And I hope I can do this without getting teary-eyed, because...
Take a big breath, and then we're going for it.
Okay. Here we were in, this is Daphne and I, here we were in 2003, and I'm, you know, in Kentucky. We were in August 22nd, 2003, and we did a session, and I'm already, like, exploring the idea that Ra is connected to Jesus and thinking about it, and, you know, I already had this one line from Wilcox that said, "We came to you in Christianity, but we don't speak in those terms anymore." So now I'm doing a session with Daphne in this motel, and I said, "Are we?" We called in the light, and then Daphne said, "Are we proceeding to the divine conscious access mechanism, the latent rarefied structures of DNA, molecular wiring of sublogi, solar logos slowed down beneath the threshold of the speed of light, thus resulting in the materialization of form. The trick, the challenge, to remain open to the highest frequencies of love while incarnate in a substellar, yet, i.e., sub-light speed vehicle of materialization. Proceed with the questions, please." Well, we just called in the light, and I said, that's what came out. And I said, "Oh my God, what is this? This is, do I understand that?" And, you know, one of the things this is I'm getting is we talked about different dimensions and moving at different speeds, that at the really high levels, they're moving above the speed of light. They're not bound by the physical universe. So then I said, "Who's speaking to us right now?" And Daphne answered, "Yes, we have regarded this contact closely. We identify ourselves. We are the ninth vibration of your solar council of the local Elohim under the direct tutelage of Ra and in association with the Council of An and the Council of Banat." Now, keep in mind, I'm saying, do I trust this? And I'm telling you to ask the same question, because how do I know this is not something negative coming through trying to impress me? Well, I said, "Thank you. Could you explain the interaction of Ra and the Elohim in relationship to the one known as Jesus and the relationship to the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost? This is a complex interrelationship dynamic. As you have so asked, let us proceed as follows. Father, Son, Holy Ghost, it is written, in your world religions of this Trinitarian consciousness, it is a key to the triune, the destiny of the heart, the link with the psychos, the psyche, and the spirit to form a vortex energy spiraling out of the propensity for heaviness, and Saturn boxed inness of this low propensity. When the Father decided to manifest the Son, he gave a part of his life essence and essentially threw a spark into the denser realms, into the denser ethers, in order to, shall we say, ignite them in the passion of the light densities of the love vibration. Do you understand this, Wynn? Yes, I do. I wasn't sure if I did, but I said I did. I want to ask a question. Was the Father the one infinite creator? Who was the Father? Was it the Solar Logi? Was it Ra, the Elohim? Who would have represented the Father in terms of the specific decision to put the Son into this density? As you would understand this question, this decision was made by the one known as Ra. Thank you. Did the Elohim co-create and participate in the event? The Elohim were of a supportive nature, similarly as a mother and father are supportive in their roles to bringing up a child. When was the Holy Spirit energy, which I define as the vibratory energetic space around me, becoming aware that it's uplifted by the energetic force? You speak in terms too intellectual. Move into the field of the heart. It is there you will find the key to the Holy Spirit. It is, shall we say, the gift parousia. Look up this word. It is the descent of the Pentecostal dove into the heart. Can you spell parousia? And then they spell it. And how did Jesus uncover his own mission while he was in the physical? What were the events that allowed him to reveal to himself what he was supposed to say? He did not, as you would say, reveal to himself. He was in constant and direct communication with the Father and knew from a very early age, what would you say, 4 or 5 years old, that he was here for a specific purpose, that he was here for a specific position, a mission to enable mankind to emerge the next step. And so the Father would have been Ra, and he was getting messages. That is affirmative, but not just in the dream state, also in the waking state. He was incredibly intuitive. He saw God everywhere, in everything, in everyone, was able to read the higher frequency vibrations emanating from the auric fields, not only of the rocks and trees and the people, but every single sentient thing and non-sentient thing on the planet. As it is written in your Bible, they say, in the end times, when Christ is to come again and walk among you, it is actually an awakening in the cellular matrix of every human on the planet who is free-willingly open to the receiving of these higher transmissions, that every rock and stone shall start to speak. Do you know the meaning of this? The rocks and the stones have always spoken, but your frequencies have not been open enough for you to understand that they themselves are a part of all that is, and therefore a part of you. And then,
you gave the material within the time. Congratulations, Lynn.
I did. We still have 4 minutes, you know.
Yeah.
And I wanted to cover one other thing, which I had read to you earlier. Well, you know, I am looking all over the place to try to validate this. I'm saying, man, this is big. And in 2002, when Daphne and I were together, we were at a bookstore in Encinitas, and she took this book off the shelf, and they said, they want you to read this. And in the book, I hardly understood it. It was called Voyagers 2, The Secrets of a Mentee. And I couldn't understand it, and I'm pretty sophisticated. But there were things that kept coming up in it that I could understand that related to all the material I was going through. And here is one of them. You know, I read this to Carla. because Carla was the only person that had been currently channeling a voice that identified itself as Ra. Now, this woman who wrote this was not channeling Ra, but she was channeling something called the Guardians. But she talked about Ra. Due to the Templar and Templar Axiom seals, the concept of soul harvesting became part of many religious teachings. Soul harvesting referred to souls bearing the Templar seals being brought by one of the helper organizations before the Ra Confederacy for review, at which time those souls deemed safe for transit to Tara or higher systems would be released from the Templar seals and allowed to end the perpetual cycle of birth and rebirth on Earth. Now, another way of looking at the Templar seals is the veil that holds us in. We have energies that radiate from our body, but they can't go beyond the veil. We're obstructed. Those passing the review would have evolved to comprehension of the necessity for the law of one. That's the first time she said the law of one, I believe, in this book, and would have actively employed those principles within their present incarnation. Passing the review meant the soul would be harvested or cleared of its distortions and allowed to send to Tara for rebirth within the sixth and seventh races following its completed cycle. The soul could ascend out of matter. In some traditions, this concept became translated as Judgment Day, or similar ideas of having to pass God's test and become worthy. But in truth, God universe is free, and these concepts applied only to beings bearing the Templar seals who wore the armor of their disregard for the law of one within the configurations of their genetic code. Process of initiation that helped the mystery schools of old and those of present were all designed to assist in this graduation process, and many were designed specifically to release the Templar seals and to protect individuals from inadvertently adopting the seals through interbreeding. And that blew my mind, and I started to say, how do you help people release this? And some of you that come into our Sunday calls and feel that great sense of expansion is, I believe, we're setting a reference point for freeing of those Templar seals. I believed that's what Jesus was doing, helping, using his own connection and his connection to the higher frequencies to create the opportunity for loving energy and opening hearts. And it is 6:55. Clara, I'll give you a chance to make some comments while we leave. I got
yes,
through it.
You did
okay.
A wonderful job. I think that it is definitely of interest to all of us to take a good look at what Wynn was talking about, to check the material that he's got for free on his site, and join us next Saturday. You can go to CarlaGwynnCoalition.com and sign up, and I hope we get to see you this Saturday.
You know, Carla, maybe at the beginning of Saturdays, we could go through a little bit more of this, okay? Because there's more that I haven't shared that I think builds the case. And, you know, if this is true, it makes this connection to the Ra group really important. And you might look at it in a different way, just even contemplating this possibility. So in any case, thank you so much, Carla, for letting me do that. It's like material that I was scared to share with you in 2003. I said, oh, my God, I can't tell this to Carla. And here it is 10 years later, and we're sharing it. And that doesn't mean she believes it. It's like none of you should believe it, including me. Consider just the possibilities and keep paying attention. And on that note, let me unmute everybody. And where are they?
Love you, Wynn. Love you, Carl. I love you, Terry.
Where is here? I got my unmute thing going. And
awesome.
We are unmuted, I think.
What a great job. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Wynn. Thank you, Carla.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Terry. Thank you, everyone. Such a beautiful call.
Thank you, Wynn. Thank you, Carla.
Awesome.